Broadcasting live from atop the Rocky Mountains, the crossroads of the West. You are listening to the Liberty Roundtable Radio Talk Show.
Happy to have you along, my fellow Americans. Sam Bushman and Kirk Crosby live on your radio. Hard-hitting news the networks refuse to use starts now. Ladies and gentlemen, I mentioned that I do a technology show on the weekends called TechWatch Radio. I've mentioned that many times on the air. And it's a long story, but the partner that I had doing that show with me decided he wasn't up to doing it anymore. He had too many things on his plate. And anyway, he loves the broadcast, but just didn't have time to continue. And so I decided rather than do a show by myself on the weekends, what I thought I'd do is dedicate the first hour of Fridays to technology. I thought that'd be kind of fun. Instead of another tech guru with me, would have Kirk Crosby, who's... you know, he does decent at tech, but he might have more tech questions than answers many times. And, you know, we thought we'd kind of focus on that and see what happens. And I thought it'd be kind of fun and educational and keep the show going, if you will. So with that, we're going to start talking about tech every Friday for the first hour. And there's just weird stuff going on in tech everywhere. In my opinion, it's very concerning, a lot of it. A lot of it is, you know, it's not the technology, I've mentioned this before either, is good or bad. It's how it's used and by whom, if you will, on if it's good or bad. But there's several things that concern me in tech, and we'll talk about some of these. First off, Kurt, welcome to the tech show, sir.
Okay, do I do Buenos
no,
Dias?
No, come on, this is technology.
Okay, well...
you got to find a tech phrase. Let me just start out by telling you this. Google knows you drink too much.
Google, there's a lot of things Google doesn't know.
Well, that's exactly the whole reason that I'm bringing it up, Kurt. The fact is, it says this. Google knows you drank too much last night. Story's written by Scott Smith, United Press International. Dateline Washington, you had a blast. Saying goodbye to 2014, you woke up with a big old hangover. Google knows that already, folks. Well, the problem is, what happens when that's just flat out not true? Okay, I don't drink a drop of alcohol, period. Okay? Kurt doesn't drink a drop of alcohol, period. So Google does not know this at all. And Google assumes because people wake up and they query hangover remedies and they query this and they query that, and there's a great chance in certain areas, Kurt, of the country, where drinking is very popular, that is the case. But what happens is Google extrapolates this data and then seems to know or thinks that it knows about you. Just because you haven't Googled it yet, Kurt, you might have too big of a hangover to Google it so far. Otherwise, you would have. See what I'm saying? Okay, and this idea that we take data or take assumptions and... bring it across to reality is very concerning, to say the least. I understand that these engines can really make a lot of difference in terms of knowing what people are thinking, believing, understanding. But a lot of times when you research something, it may not be for the reasons that somebody wants you to or wants to believe that you research it. Let me give you an example. Let's say that I research the flu. Google's going to assume that I have the flu or one of my loved ones has the flu. But it may not be true. I might be a news guy. And I might have seen a news story about the flu, and so I'm researching the flu. And so I guess what I'm saying is they're starting to create these big old data banks of assumptions that I believe is very dangerous indeed. And on many occasions, they're correct in their assumptions, but in many cases, they are not. And that's where this technology can go awry. Google knows you drank too much last night? No, Google doesn't know that. Doesn't know that at all. In fact, I submit to you that most people did not drink too much. Kurt, I would submit to you that more people did not drink too much for New Year's than did. Do you think that's a fair assumption, or do you think more people drank too much than didn't? Any idea on that?
You know, I would say that there is there are less people that do than...
That's
than,
right.
Think.
That's my point. And why do I know that? Because I've been to places in my younger days where people drank before. And you know what? There's a few people that are drunk and out of control, but the majority of the people aren't. Not everybody's just ruined. It isn't true. Now, if you go to certain places, like if you go to the bar, the numbers might be significantly increased. So if Google wants to try to say, well, you know, those who went to the bar and then those who whatever, and okay, they might get a little bit more accurate data. Anyway, it's very concerning when these companies start to take this data and then assume things based on that. I think we need to be really, really careful of that. And it makes me almost want to search for hangover remedies just to poison the well. Kurt, are you familiar with poisoning the well? The idea is that if these bureaucrats and these government officials and these, whatever you want to call them, corporate entities in this case, but, you know, Google was started by, you know, involved with government money in the first place for the startup back in the day. Okay, if these companies are going to use this data erroneously, then maybe we all, every single American ought to just basically send in the search phrase, you know what? Hangover remedy. And then that way, the data will just be so erroneous that it won't be usable. And, you know, they might say that's kind of a form of terrorism, but I don't think so. I think it's a form of terrorism for them to do this and to suggest that, hey, Sam and Kurt drank too much last night. That isn't true, and it's a false assumption. Wrongfully derived, etc. All right, next story I find of interest, Kurt, and you might like this. You've heard of Take Your Child to Work Day before, haven't you?
Yep.
And it's kind of to help mm-hmm. children know what dad does for a living and stuff like that. Now, a lot of the homeschool families, they take their children to work day seriously, and it happens a lot more than once a year. It's just kind of a special day. It happens quite often. But there's a new twist on Take Your Child to Work Day, Kurt, and it's called Take Your Parent to Work Day. Yeah, and so the idea is that here's what's happening. The grandma and grandpas of today don't understand all the changes that have happened in society, technologically speaking. And so the idea is if you take your parents to work, they might kind of get a clue what you actually do. So the dateline is Mountain View, California. And this one lady freaked out when she found out her daughter quit her job at an employee recruiting agency to work for LinkedIn. Because, you know, LinkedIn is a company that grandma never heard of, right? But Amy said, hey, this is a good career move for me, Mom. You just don't get it. And so Mom, meaning the grandma, because it's an adult lady, right? Grandma couldn't understand why on earth you'd want to work at LinkedIn. Oh, my, said Grandma. But she said when she got the chance to go to work day with her adult daughter, she came away with a much better understanding of what LinkedIn is and how her daughter fits in with a legitimate career. And so this grandma was back at LinkedIn for the second annual event, Bring Your Parents Day, joining thousands of parents at companies around the globe in an event that gives adult children a rare opportunity to showcase the cultural and technological changes that have transformed the modern workplace. Believe it or not, more than 50 companies in 16 countries are now embracing this generational spin on the take to work for kids craze that began a couple of decades ago. Now, you see, parents used to try to enlighten their kids about career and all that kind of stuff, but now parents of adult children are not even able to comment on one's career because they don't have a clue. Now, at first, people are saying, bring your parents to work. Is that something you really ought to be doing? But believe it or not, Jeff Weiner, the CEO of LinkedIn, or Weiner, anyway, it makes sense. Once you've done it, you kind of see the benefits. You see how valuable it is. It helps us all speak a common language. It really works out well. The grandma and grandpas, if you will be startled about what they see and hear. They might understand ad agencies in a new light. Anyway, what do you think of this, Kurt? You ready to bring your parents to work? Teach them how to use Twitter, sir?
You know, I don't think that'll work for me, number one, because I haven't used Twitter. I mean,
that's because you're like grandma and grandpa, then. Maybe
the hashtag.
Maybe your son Trevor needs to bring you to work. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh. But you know, there's some things that I'm a little techy on, but Twitter doesn't happen to be one of them so far.
You got to fix that.
Yes, I understand.
Now, this grandma says she's not really sure of the power or the technology behind LinkedIn. She doesn't really understand all that. But my response to her on that is, you don't know how your car works really either, do you, Grandma? Right?
Good point.
You turn on your car and you drive it, and it's kind of the same with LinkedIn. LinkedIn is just simply a website that you can use to, it's kind of like an online resume, if you will. An online way to get your name out there and to put together a professional profile and for people to connect, to meet, to refer one another, to associate with one another. And I'm not really personally a fan of LinkedIn, but that's what it is, and that's what it does, and it's growing. It's a viable career for sure. There's professionals by the millions on there, and for good reason there are. Anyway, I kind of thought that was interesting about bring your parents to work day, or take your parents to work day. I don't think it's a good idea. And the reason that I don't, Kurt, is it seems to me that you've got this scenario where parents are kind of like helicopter parents these days. In other words, they never want to let their kids go. They want to make all the decisions for their kids. They want to be, you know, involved in the kids' lives. And I don't agree with that. I mean, I think you should be involved in their lives, but not controlling their lives. In other words, a man is supposed to get out of his home and leave his parents and find a woman and cleave unto her, and she's supposed to cleave unto him, and they're supposed to make their own lives. And it's okay if my mother doesn't know exactly the details of my career. She doesn't really need to know. She knows that I'm a nationally syndicated talk show host, and she can listen to the radio so she can hear one of my talk shows. She knows that I'm a national speaker on all things constitutionally, and I speak on tech issues as well. She knows these things, and she doesn't need to know more of the details. In fact, if she came to work with me, she'd just sit in the background while I do a radio show for a couple hours a day. And then she'd sit around while I research news on the internet and browse around on the internet, but I'm really gathering news stories. And then she'd sit around while I'm on the phone half the day, and then she'd still wonder what I do, right? So that wouldn't do a whole lot of good. I don't really think take your parents to work day is that great of an idea personally as an adult. I just don't think it's warranted. I don't think it's necessary. And I think there needs to be a separation. And it's kind of like when a husband and wife get married, I believe they ought to take off and not be near either set of parents for a time. Because that way they can create autonomy. They can create their own family nucleus of stability. And they need to learn to turn to each other in times of difficulty and struggle and not times of, turmoil, turn to parents or guidance from outside sources. They need to learn to look to each other and look to God for solutions. Anyway, there you have that. Third story that I find fascinating, Kurt, is 50% of occupations, they say, that exist today will no longer exist in 2025. It's a report that came out. And first off, do you believe it, Kurt? Or do you think it's just too aggressive? 50% of occupations that exist today will not exist in 2025.
Well, things do change over time, and there are some big changes coming with the whole drone world we live in, or we're going to live in, I guess. I just don't know. It's difficult to say the speed at which everything will be up to.
I'm going to tell you, it's bogus and it ain't going to happen.
All right.
Now, it's true that things change, and it's true that occupations change, and it's true that certain occupations are rendered irrelevant. I agree with all that kind of stuff. But they say workspaces with rows of desks will become completely redundant. Not because they are not fit for purpose, but simply because that purpose no longer exists. They say a paradigm shift is expected to take place. And they say over the next 15 years, things will change so much. But remember, by 2025, it's already 2015, so 10 years. They say a lot of the occupations that exist today will be redundant by 2025. Artificial intelligence will transform businesses, will change the work that people do. Processes and the way customers work will simply disappear. The report's entitled Fast Forward to 2030 now, so I guess 15 years in that case, I guess there's a group called China-based Genesis that's involved in this research as well. And they interviewed 220 experts and business leaders and young people, etc., from Asia, Europe, North America, all over the world. And they say nearly 50% of occupations today will no longer exist in 2025. They say that you'll leverage artificial intelligence. And they say the new jobs will be immensely more fulfilling than today's jobs. Now, I don't believe this. I do believe we will see a revolution in how we work. I agree with that. Okay, they say that it'll change how we plan and think about workplaces, and I don't buy it for 2 seconds. Think about the dramatic changes in the way you've seen people work in the past 2 decades. They say that'll continue to evolve over the next 10 to 15 years. Companies will create value and enhance employee performance through innovative workplaces, through strategies and design. Anyway, it goes on and on. But I don't believe this at all, Kurt. They say many of these opportunities have, in fact, already arrived. They say smart companies can gain a competitive advantage by embracing these. For example, they say by 2030, a majority of real estate transactions will be made online. That's probably true. They say they'll be made in what are called real-time marketplaces. They say real estate usually changes slowly, but these new aggregators will revolutionize the market, allowing tenants and many building types and owners to contribute waste and unused space back into an ecosystem of available space. They say given the coming massive changes, companies will need to relearn how to gain high performance from employees and contractors. But I don't believe this, and the reason that I don't believe it is I just think that it's oversimplified. First off, there's a lot of companies that have vast amounts of money tied up in this real estate. And the idea that they can just, what, vacate the real estate? Not need it anymore? What are they going to do with it? Sell it on a market where nobody else wants it? Because the whole world is changing? See, I think things will change. No question. But we overestimate how long it'll take, or I'm sorry, we underestimate how long it'll take. And I'm going to give you a simple example to make my point. I started out internet streaming radio stations in 1997 or 98 is when I started literally streaming. And it was very crude back then and hard to do, and it didn't work out that well, but it was pretty neat. It was growing. Now it's really commonplace, but it still hasn't shut down radio. The traditional AM/FM dials. Will it eventually? Maybe. But we always have this idea that it's just going to shut something down and something's going to be totally different tomorrow. And I agree there's been some disruptive technology that have done that, but as a whole, it doesn't happen near as fast. So 98 to now, how long is that? 108's 10 years? 17 years, folks. And, you would think that, you know what, regular traditional AM FM radios would be dead. First off, half the AM radios you want to listen to are so fuzzy you can't listen to them. Secondly, FM is not in most smartphones. You can't hear it indoors very well. The list goes on and on. But it has not killed AM and FM radio at all, and it's taken 17 years, and streaming is popular and it's important, and it's certainly growing, but it hasn't come to full measure yet by any stretch of the imagination. In fact, right now, if I say that I've got an internet broadcast, people go, oh, well, that's neat. But people in radio and most people in the world don't think it's a legitimate broadcast. If I say I'm on AM and FM affiliates and on the internet, then they say, oh, wow, really? And they think I'm somebody. And this is just an example of my point that it takes time for these things to happen. You've got so many barriers to these changes. Even if technologically we can make something happen, that doesn't mean we're going to. Now, remember music services back in the day, what, around 2000, I think it was, in that range, 98, 2000. We said, man, the record companies are dead. No one's going to buy DVDs or CDs of music anymore. It's all going to be downloads of music. And they fought Napster and a bunch of companies for the longest time, and They had it all gummed up in legalese for so long. And the company should have been smarter. They should have realized the trend and moved forward to embrace it, but they didn't. Well, now it's turning out that we're still determining how music will be sold. We agree that it's not going to be CD like it was yesteryear, but it's taken disruptive technology a long time. In fact, I got a CD for Christmas. Do people still buy CDs and DVDs, folks? They do. Now, the changes are this. The latest headline says downloads are being replaced with streaming. So now the latest trend, again, 15 years plus after this big battle about DVD or CD sales were dead, right? 15 years after that, they're still debating of exactly how we're going to utilize music. And it's not going to be primarily download. Download is being replaced by streaming. People are saying, why do I want to download my music and have my hard drive full of music when I can just store my music out there in the cloud and never download it at all, just stream it whenever I want to listen to it. It's just available for me 24/7. And so that just gives you an example of what I'm talking about. Things don't happen in a day. Things don't change as fast as you want them to. People stick with what they know, what they're comfortable with. In fact, Kirk Crosby doesn't even tweet. He doesn't even know what Twitter hardly is. I mean, he can say, I know what Twitter is. It's where you send a little message to people. But that's the point that I'm getting at, is that people take time. And even if there's technological capabilities to accomplish a given task, that doesn't mean that it will be embraced. Let me give you another example. How long has it been since we could literally work from home? In other words, telecommute over the internet. About the same thing, 15, 20 years. Because even before the internet was up and running, there was earlier ways that you could communicate. All right, but the question is, how much telework do you see? How much working from home is there? I mean, if we're going to say the environment's being destroyed by everybody driving their cars around, first thing you would do is back working from home big time. But it hasn't been backed. In fact, sure, there's a lot of people that work from home, but not that many, right? Not that many at all. So I'm convinced that this forward-thinking report that, hey, 50% of your jobs are going to be gone by 2025 is true in the long term. Jobs will change. Jobs have changed, from the Industrial Revolution to the Technological Revolution. There's no doubt things change. But it doesn't happen near as fast as people want you to believe. It just doesn't. And I gave you several examples to make the point that it takes a long time for things to come to fruition. It just does. All right, quick pause. Sam and Kurt, we are talking tech for this hour. You are listening to Tech Watch Radio on Liberty Roundtable Live.
Pursuing liberty, using the Constitution as our guide. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
We fought, we learned. We struggled. We won. Despite Obama's best efforts, the newspaper of the human resistance survives. We have lived only to face a new nightmare, the war against the machines. Read about our struggle in The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. The Sovereign is a 24-page monthly tabloid newspaper about the war between man and machines. We've tried reason, we've tried legislation. We've tried every peaceful means imaginable, and all it's gotten us is shut out. So now we fight the machines. Order online today at thesovnews.com or find The Sovereign at select newsstands. Remember to read The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. The human resistance's battle against the machines will be everlasting. This is mercy. It was never our destiny to stop the age of Obama. It was merely to survive it. Together. Together.
Imagine a school where faith and integrity are at its center. where heritage and responsibility instill character, where educating both hearts and minds brings about academic excellence. There is a school in American Fork where character and embracing the providence of a living God are fundamental, where students' national test scores average near the 90th percentile. Based on LDS principles and a love of country, now in our 39th year, American Heritage School is accepting fall enrollment for kindergarten through high school. What would you do for your child? Give them an education that will prepare them for life. Located east of the Temple in American Fork, American Heritage School is a remarkable and affordable alternative. Visit us, find us online, or in the Yellow Pages. American Heritage School in American Fork.
Liberty is not free. Its costs are innumerable. Without monetary funding, the valiant efforts of freedom-loving Americans become diminished or outright defeated. We present a solution, the Give Me Liberty Fund. The plan is quite simple. Invite individual Americans to contribute less than a dollar a day. These monetary funds are used to promote liberty-minded media, organizations, events, candidates, movements, and speakers. In the spirit of transparency, all expenditures are published. Patriotic business owners provide discounted products and services to Give Me Liberty Fund members. Our greatest strength is in numbers. Go to GiveMeLibertyFund.com and become part of the solution today. GiveMeLibertyFund.com. Participate in the peaceful restoration of the greatest and freest country in the world.
All right, back with you live, ladies and gentlemen. Sam Bushman, Kurt Cosby on your radio talking tech. As always, we keep an eye on tech so you don't have to. You know, technology is a fun topic. It really is. And it's complicated for folks to understand. And so we thought we'd just kind of break out in the first hour of each Friday, talk about tech. We'll be able to answer questions. We'll be able to give you our tech thoughts on issues and a breakdown on the things that are important. So I had mentioned that it just takes so long for technology to become part of the marketplace of ideas and accepted. You've been able to telework or work from home for almost 20 years now, but not that many people are doing it, really. And you would think that people would back it big time when people have to spend a ton of time in traffic jams going to and from work and everything else. You'd think it would become like in. And everybody thought that 20-plus years ago. They thought, hey, man, everybody's going to be teleworking by 2010 or something. Now it's 2015 and we're not even close. And I mentioned this headline, research confirms that streaming kills download sales. So now we thought downloading music instead of buying CDs was going to be the answer. 15 years ago, everybody thought, hey, everybody's going to want to just download an MP3. MP3s will kill CD sales. But now it turns out that folks are embracing streaming services, and streaming services are starting to kill downloads and download sales. So, again, technology changes, folks. It's about impossible to predict the future. It really is. One thing you know for certain from experience, though, it takes a long time for change to happen. Oftentimes, it takes a generation or two, okay? Kids are now growing up with iPads, and you're going to start to see, you know, a change in that. But it takes a generation or two. I still know a lot of people that don't really know computers very well. And how long has computers been part of the mainstay of society now? Since the mid-80s? Late 80s? It's almost 30 years, folks. Okay? Things take a long time to come to fruition. All right, Kurt, it looks like the iPhone now gets new Microsoft applications. Did you see this? There's kind of been a big battle.
iPhone and Google are battling?
No. iPhone Droid, gets new Microsoft applications, Kurt.
Oh, okay, I get it.
It's a USA Today story, and it's been a big battle because the iPhone hasn't had deals on Microsoft Office apps, and we've always thought it was a mistake because Microsoft isn't competing there. But now it's changing. They had a blockbuster release of Office for the iPad. earlier this year, but now Microsoft has unveiled new Office apps for iPhone and says that consumers using any of its mobile apps will be able to create and now edit Office documents for free. The new apps for iPhone for Word, Excel, and PowerPoint, that's Microsoft's iconic activity or business suite, if you will. They say it'll be fantastic. It's free. And they say Microsoft moved to a subscription model last year. And they say anybody using a smartphone or a tablet can create, edit, and utilize these apps for free. They say you'll still need an Office 365 subscription for premium features, including more advanced editing of Word docs, images, and charts. And they say they offered a preview of Microsoft Office applications for the Android phones as well now. And there you have it. I think this is a huge positive move, Kurt. I think this is great news. I think it'll make a tremendous difference for Office. One of the biggest ways that Apple has gained so much ground is in the education arenas and everything else. They got people hooked on their computers from the start. They say the apps going forward will be updated in lockstep. They're literally the same code now. And anyway, I'm really pleased with this. I think it'll be smart for Microsoft to do this. And because, again, people use what they're comfortable with. And if people don't use the Microsoft answer, then pretty soon they'll be hooked on something else and Microsoft won't get a foothold. This is a great way for them to get a foothold and for people to be using Microsoft products, even on Apple devices. And that's one of the things you're going to see in the future is you're going to see less and less operating system dependent and more you use what you're familiar with on any platform. So keep an eye on that ball. Hey, Kurt, you got milk? Pretty soon you'll be able to ask your fridge that.
Mm. Well, I've heard there's a milk music kind of thing. What's that all about, Sam? Do you know?
Well, first off, you'll be able to ask your fridge if you got milk. The way you'll do it is you'll text your fridge, Kurt. What do you think of that?
I guess that means you don't move, you just text, and then you have to go to the gym to get exercise?
Yeah, dude. Come on. Modern technology, buddy. You got milk, and you can just text your fridge and ask, they claim. And they say even when you're at the grocery store, you'll be able to text your fridge and see if it's got milk. They say smart appliance owners will just have to download. They call the Line messaging app, and they would communicate with it the same way they would with a real live human being, Kurt. So you can tell your refrigerator, I'm going on vacation, and your refrigerator will enter what's called a power-saving mode, Kurt. You can text your dryer and it'll say, hey, man, your towels and sheets will be dry in 30 minutes. There's preset modes for vacation, leaving home, coming home, etc. And they basically say these apps are here now. And if you get a smart phone app for these modern appliances, then you'll be able to communicate with all of them. LG has a smart refrigerator, for example. It'll take a picture of what's inside, Kurt. So when you text your refrigerator from the grocery store, it'll show you the picture of what's inside. You can also see if your lettuce is green or brown or whatever. And there you have it. What do you think of that idea, Kurt?
Wow. I don't know how to control the excitement. I mean, it's just...
What? You're not all excited about this, Kurt?
Sorry about that, Sam.
Why aren't you excited about that?
Well, I mean, I do see that it would be probably entertaining to text my fridge.
Sure, it's not about entertainment. It's about finding out if you have milk, buddy, or not, you know?
Yeah, well, you know, you might just have remembered last time you looked at it. It was pretty low, so you might as well grab a little bit more. You know,
remember?
Or maybe what they've got to do is just pour it into a certain little area, and then that little, reservoir would tell you, hey, man, you're low on milk. You'd even fill out your own little shopping list, you know.
Yeah. I mean, hey. Here's my problem with the whole plan. You ready?
Sure.
The next headline says, hey, thermostats, you know, your thermostat to keep your temperature, and your refrigerator might be the next haven for hackers.
Just what we need.
So it might be cool to test your fridge to see if it's got milk, but you know what? The fact is thermostats and fridges may be the next haven for hackers is what they're saying. And that's kind of my problem with a lot of this technology is you got to start to weigh, Kurt, what benefits you're getting versus the cost or the penalty if things don't go well. And I'm for, just as much as anybody, technology. But I'm not for technology when it's not going well or when it has potential of downsides. Do I really want these problems to happen? I don't think so. I don't want to have my fridge get hacked. I mean, that's goofy. And so that's kind of the problem that we're experiencing, Kurt, with a lot of this technology is if I hook up my fridge and my washer and my dryer, then what can they do if they hack my thermostat, Kurt? Any idea?
Yeah, they can make it too hot or too cold for you, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they might also be able to manipulate it somehow to waste a lot of energy and ratchet up my bill.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
And or control my environment in ways that I don't want. Like, what if I want it hotter, but this thing just simply won't let me make it hotter? I turn up the temperature and it shows that it's hotter, but it's really not.
Hmm. Yep. You're going to have to take back control of your devices.
Well, and the best way to do that, in my opinion, is, look, if there's a valuable reason to do something, technologically speaking, then you know what? Do it. But if there's not, why should I have my thermostat be controlled by a computer or by over the internet? Now, I know people would say, well, Sam, you can train it to turn up the heat when you get home and turn it down when you leave and turn it down at night when you sleep. And, Sam, you can have it turn on your AC in the summer, but, you know, if it gets to where it's working too hard, you can put in an energy-saving mode and do this and do that. And I get all that. But that versus me getting hacked, it's not worth it, folks. It's not worth it at all. So as much as I am a technological guy and I love technology and I happen to be pretty decent at it, I would advise against too much technology. I think there's kind of a balance. One of the phrases we use for TechWatch Radio in the past is make sure technology serves you, but that it doesn't own you, Kurt. That kind of refers to the idea if you're not very careful, pretty soon technology owns you. It controls you. It's addictive. It gets into the decisions that you make to the point of you're not rational. And I think that's
good advice for anything that you, quote, own or think about owning is remember it's going to come with responsibilities and duties. And, you know, you have a limited amount of time in this daily cycle. Yeah. So
yeah,
it's probably going to own you a little more.
All right. There's folks out there, Kurt, in cybersecurity people.
There are, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the FT Times boys, FTTimes.com, headline reads, cybersecurity groups use fake computers to trap hackers. Now, I just wanted to see if I can understand this. You know, lately you had the whole Sony thing / CIA, North Korea. You know, then you've got, it was really Sony bad guys that got fired that did it. How does this fake computer thing kind of fit into this and trapping hackers, et cetera? Can you kind of help those of us who might not have ever hacked a computer?
Well, yeah, let's start out by talking about what a fake computer is, Kurt. Because a fake computer is a computer.
Good point.
It's not
right.
A fake
so
computer.
Then it wouldn't be a fake computer. Okay.
Well, think about it this way. it's a fake computer in that it's not going to carry out what you hope it to be. In other words, it's not a computer just at your control in the normal sense. It is a computer, but it's a fake computer because it's designed to get you to behave on it like it was a day-to-day computer. But it has mechanisms in it to track your every movement and to do things. And so I guess what I'm trying to get at is it's a computer. It's not a fake computer, but it's a fake computer in the sense of which you know it and use it. Let me give you an example. Let's say that you access your email from some place, just random hotel or wherever. And there's a computer there. And they say, sir, you can get on this computer and you can, you know, check your email. If it was a normal computer, you'd get on there, you'd check your email, you'd be done. It would not save your information. The world would be all cool, right? It'd be exactly as you think it to be, right? But if I created a fake computer, it would let you view your email. I mean, it has to, right? But it's a fake computer because it's not really doing what you think. It's checking your email and doing what you want it to do, sure. But I'm also tracking. Now, let's say that I download and save every email. And you get your password. And I control and track every movement you make. And then I can use that information against you. So that's kind of what's going on here with a lot of these hacking tools. It's not necessarily a fake computer per se. Okay, they're not really fake computers. But they're fake in the sense that the hacker thinks that. They can just control it like any computer. But unbeknownst to them, it's not the computer they think that it is. And that's kind of what's going on. So I guess I submit to you that this headline's a little bit of a misnomer when we talk about these cybersecurity groups using fake computers. They're not exactly fake computers. But there is details about that computing experience, if you will, that is not known. So now your question is, how does that relate to this Sony thing, right? Well, I don't know that it relates.
Yeah,
I don't know that the two are related, per se.
Yeah, okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay, for example, what I mean by that is the government of the United States says North Korea did it, Kurt. But I'm not convinced that's true. And a lot of the experts in computing are trying to say to the United States government, we need proof because we don't believe you. In fact, we have evidence to the contrary, right? And so that's kind of the battle. But it is true that there's a battle between the good guys and the bad guys, the white hats and the black hat computer people, Kurt. And the battle is who can get ahead of who in terms of security versus hacking. And the debate comes down to, can you outsmart the hackers? And what they're saying is, yeah, we can create computers that will act as kind of a honeypot, attract you to start hacking, but then we will log and control and do things that will allow us to find out who you are. And you think it's a regular computer, but it isn't. It's designed with something different in mind than you had expected. And I think that's happening. And I think we'll see more of that. So there you have it, Kurt. Any thoughts, input on it?
You know, it's just amazing, isn't it, to see what the old computer's done in our time. I just, in fact, last night watched an old James Bond movie where the talk was about, microchips. And the goal of the bad guy was basically to eliminate Silicon Valley. You know, and then his group was basically going to be the new providers of all these silicon, chips. They pointed out that they were made out of sand and, somehow turned them into the silicon chip. And, the goal of this guy was going to drop Silicon Valley out of the planet by creating some kind of an earthquake there on the different faults, and that hasn't happened as far as I know. Silicon Valley's still hitting it pretty hard. There's some other areas around the world that are providing a lot of tech, close to us is one of them, in the Utah area, and then there's hotbeds all over the place, I guess, huh, Sam?
Yeah. Things change, but they don't change as fast as people think.
Right.
Now,
right.
It turns out that Fox News people are linking these fake computers to the Sony hackers. So they are making a link to this, Kurt. But I don't accept the link they're making. In other words, if we're using fake computers to track hackers, we're talking about computers with like decoy software on them. It's not really doing what you think it is. You log in to do some hacking and it does other things to circumvent you. The problem is the United States government's pointing to, North Korea on this Sony thing, and I don't think they're right. Now, the problem is we don't have the information to know what's really being done. So the question becomes, did the FBI screw up again? Yeah. People now are wondering, did the government screw up on this thing, Kurt? And I think
Well, that's typically a clown question, bro, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Did the government screw up?
Because the answer is yes, of course they did. Right? They say hoax of mail led to FBI Sony alert, Kurt. The U.S. is threatening or warning about threats to the media from Sony hacking alerts. And so there you go. All I'm telling you is it's very strange what's happening in computing. And all I can say is this. The days of just cruising around the internet for fun, Kurt, are over. Because it's just too fraught with peril and trouble. It's like driving around in neighborhoods that you don't want to be in. Just too many bad things can happen, sir. And so you got to start being really careful. And you got to start thinking of your computer as a very important tool. But you got to think of it in terms of I'm only going to do the things on it that need to be done. And I'm going to be very careful of how I go about it so that I don't have problems. In other words, just because you can put an app on your fridge and you can text your fridge or your thermostat, that doesn't mean you ought to do it, right? And there's cybersecurity groups and experts out there that are trying to entrap people and do all kind of things, but we got to be really careful. All right, there you have that. All right, this Tech Watch Hour will get better. Part of the problem is we need to start working on some questions that people have, but they say there's a rise of a new giant, Kurt. Have you heard about this?
A new giant?
Yeah.
Like the beanstalk guy or?
No, it's the smartphone battles, Kurt.
Oh, the battles on the
smartphone. There's a Chinese company now. How do you say it? I don't know how to pronounce this, Kurt. XIAOMI. Xiaomi?
All right. I'll go there.
You don't know that? You don't know, Kurt?
No.
All right. Anyway, Xiaomi is the new giant in phones, Kurt. And it's strange that you haven't even heard of it. Neither have I until now. But they're the big giant on the block, they claim. Xiaomi took the number one position in China. They became the world's third largest smartphone maker in the process. Founded in 2010 as a lean startup to create inexpensive smartphones, they were decidedly late to the game. Their first handset came out at the time of the iPhone 4S, but Kurt, they had a clever social media marketing strategy and a business plan that related to selling services that worked well on the phone helped Xiaomi build frenzied support from young, innovative, trendy Chinese. So they say with people in China expected to buy 500 million smartphones in 2015, that's more than three times what's being sold in the United States, for instance. They say the research firm says that Xiaomi, however you say this thing, is poised to cement itself as one of the most important smartphone makers in the world. And they say they already sell internationally, but next year as they go international, it'll be a real test to see how well they'll do. And at first they started shunning markets like the United States and Europe, but hey, they're going to sell cheap, high-quality phones to emerging markets, Brazil, India, and other places. They say there was a patent or a patent complaint by Swedish's Ericsson. But don't worry, they'll get through it. Anyway, I guess they've been so successful, Kurt, that rivals are starting to even copy their phones. And there you have it. I don't know what you think of that, but there's a phone company that you and I don't even know anything about, Kurt. It's the third largest in the world.
Do they just supply phones to other guys? Is that what they typically do? It sounds
well,
like?
Kind of. I mean, you would buy a phone from Verizon or something, but it would be a certain brand of phone, right? They don't just make other people's phones. They make their own phone branded or their own branded phones. But I find it fascinating. We don't even know much about this thing. They say the company has also started to sell other devices like smart TVs, Kurt. And I guess they are really working on some innovative stuff. They're targeting markets with larger populations. So they don't even want to worry about the small populations, Kurt. They just want the big boys. Now Lenovo's a Chinese company, too. Isn't that the old IBM computers are now Lenovo machines? Anyway, time will tell where that goes, but very strange stuff. Very interesting. All right. They say constantly staring at your cell phone, Kurt, can be a pain in the neck. Just wanted to tell you that.
So make a note, not do that. Mm-hmm.
I hear that. Thanks for being alongside for the ride. That's hour one. Hour two coming up with TechWatch, or Liberty Roundtable, TechWatch Radio. We're going to be doing the technology hour on Fridays, and it'll get a little bit more fast-paced as we get used to it and kind of adjust to the change. So hang tight with that. Thanks for being alongside. We appreciate all of you. Oh, by the way, in the way we used to say it with TechWatch Radio, make it a great tech day, will you? Hey, thanks.